Due to the graphic nature of some of the content in this episode, listener discretion is advised. My own curiosity and impulsiveness have led me down a winding path. Through conversations with strangers hundreds of miles away, I've picked apart memories, searching for a thread that could tie back to the meaning behind this seemingly senseless crime. With 2 years now in the rear view, I find myself stuck, trying to finish telling a story that's still cloaked in that warm morning darkness. If anything, I have become more and more familiar with someone I never really met, a man who fought for himself and his family in the face of insurmountable danger. As a mentor once explained to me, the most meaningful things often come in the form of some contradiction, and I found the life of Matt Stewart to be no exception. His was a life filled with perpetual laughter. Tales of his juvenile antics still bring smiles to the faces of nurses at Lake Norman Hospital. And it was there in that environment, so prone to fear and suffering, Matt's lightheartedness eased the heaviest of circumstances. He was fun, but he was far from irreverent. In fact, to many, Matt was among the most deeply spiritual men they'd ever meet, steadfast in his convictions and responsibility as a nurse and father, committed always to the service of others. Matt was someone even his peers looked up to. And a decade after it was stolen, Matt's life continues to radiate comfort and inspiration to many. To me, it's instilled a firm resolve, one that propels much further than curiosity and impulse ever could. My name is Freddie, and this is Unforgotten, a podcast propelled down a winding path through a long and awful mystery, the unsolved murder of Matt Stewart.
Back in June, a husband and a wife were asleep in their upstairs bedroom here when a stranger came in, brutally attacked, and killed the husband.
How did she get a baby out of the bed and run out and just get grazed with a bullet?
I want to know what happened. I want to know why it happened.
Police spent days combing the crime scene around 31-year-old Matthew Stewart.
It was personal.
The mattress was covered in blood.
In June of last year, a few days before the first episode aired, I talked with a member of Matt's family. For the purposes of the podcast, we'll call them Savannah. Savannah told me, among other things, that police had expressed to Matt's family their continued belief that this murder was personal and that the killer was likely someone in Matt's close inner circle. Naturally, I asked Savannah if there was anyone she knew of close to Matt who had been suspected. Savannah indicated that there was someone we're going to call X. I never knew X personally, but by way of the church and school, I did know his family. In full transparency, I quite like X's family. In my experience, they're incredibly kind people. And when I asked Savannah why X's name would have been mentioned in this context, she quickly explained that it was for the sole reason that X looked like the composite sketch, and so I set this name aside, but it wouldn't be long before it would creep back into the center of my attention. It was around this time last year that I began getting contacted by several different sources from Riverlife Fellowship. Each were contacting me to make sure I was aware of certain things, like that Angel and her family had stayed at X's family's property for years after Matt's murder. X's parents had owned a huge swath of land in Mount Ulla, where X and his siblings also had houses and lived at that time. I was actually already aware of this, as Matt's daughter Hannah had explained it to me in detail when we met up last summer.
He lived at my great-grandma's for about a month, and then shortly after we moved to a farm in Mount Ulla with... And they, you know, took us in and we lived upstairs in this old, beautiful farmhouse.
Yeah,
it was so that we were out of the public eye because, I mean, it was really hard because my family tried to shield me from everything, but I knew everything that was happening. I mean, I could hear it on the news or saw it in the newspapers accidentally or whatever. I would stumble upon it.
But these sources also told me things I wasn't aware of. X's apparent likeness to the composite sketch was more than just a passing observation by a few church members. Rather, X had been formally questioned by the Mooresville Police Department in relation to Matt's murder years into the investigation. I ran these claims by two individuals who I knew were close to X and to the situation. Both confirmed what I had heard. X had been questioned by police in the wake of Matt's murder, but it actually went further than that, because both sources additionally claimed that not only had X been questioned by investigators in 2013, in their interrogations, investigators outright accused X of committing the murder. But both of these close sources were also adamant that this whole situation wasn't really a big deal, at least not anymore. X, they said, had a firm alibi at the time of the murder. He was working the night shift for a construction company in Virginia. There wasn't anything to it, they said, and it would be a waste of time for me to dig any further. But in my mind, even if X had provably nothing to do with the murder, his story would be important to highlight, as it could speak to where police were in their investigation as recently as 6 years ago. Until now, virtually everything the investigation has done since releasing the composite sketch, who they've been looking at, what kind of questions they've been asking, have all been a complete and utter mystery. So hearing what they were focused on at that time may provide some critical insight. So I contacted X over Facebook last December. I explained to him who I was, what I was doing, and what I'd heard. And then I asked for an interview. What ensued was a year of cat and mouse, back and forth chats over Facebook Messenger, with occasional assurances that an interview was forthcoming, followed by delays and rejections. Nevertheless, our conversation kept going. I kept asking questions, and X kept talking. After two offers of in-person interviews seemed to dissipate, I let X know that I could not, with a clear conscience, keep what I had learned from him and about him out of the podcast. So I'm going to summarize what I've learned and what X himself has relayed to me by providing relevant pieces of our conversation over Facebook. To do that, I've enlisted the help of another podcaster, Brandon Crouch, who hosts a show called Appetite for Discussion. Brandon is from nearby Statesville, North Carolina, and he actually went to the same nursing school as Matt many years ago. Brandon agreed to help me record a dramatization of my conversation with X over Facebook Messenger. You'll hear Brandon read X's side of the chat log, as I read my own. Again, these are clips, and not the entirety of our conversation, which has spanned the course of nearly a year. There have been some grammatical corrections to the original transcript, and names of certain places and individuals have been changed to protect anonymity. December 21st, 2018.
One thing I wanted to ask you is, how the heck did you find out I was a suspect at one time?
That's a fair question. A few folks mentioned early on that some in the community at that time suggested you looked a bit like the composite sketch, but so do a lot of people. A few months ago, some anonymous people began reaching out, saying all kinds of things. So I reached out to others close to the situation who confirmed that you were questioned at some point. I'm trying to get a handle on what really happened and dispel the rumors.
February 6th, 2019.
Hey X, hope y'all are doing well. I wanted to check back in to see if we could schedule a time to talk this week. It could be completely off the record.
Freddie, I have to respectfully decline. I've been asked by the family not to do this interview, and I'm going to do what the family wishes.
I certainly respect you wanting to do right by them. I understand the family is unhappy with me doing this podcast, and definitely wouldn't want to drag you in the middle of it with an interview.
My life is good right now. I don't need any more junk. I love Matt, and I always will. This blame of not figuring out the murderer is placed totally on the Mooresville Police Department. And to see people badmouth Angel on your podcast when they don't even know who she is, it's ridiculous.
I understand that. There's definitely a side of this that people aren't hearing. One of the reasons I wanted to talk with you is because, from the way it was explained to me, your story illustrates how off-base the Mooresville Police Department were in their investigation. And I think publicizing it could provide momentum to get them to hand off the investigation to true professionals.
They were way off base. But the thing is, I live in Mooresville and don't want anything or any reason for people to judge me. So with that being said, I was cleared of everything and moving on with my life. It messed up my life for a long time. I wish you the best. I'm sorry.
I don't know if you saw this that someone posted, but I've been accused of purposefully not talking about some of the tips I've received, which is true, in that I didn't put too much credibility at first into what was being said, because I know and love your family. I knew that mentioning your name or referencing anything would open the floodgates of criticism, and I didn't want to do that at all. I wanted to be able to silence those folks by saying on the podcast that I explored that angle and was able to confirm you weren't in North Carolina at the time anyway.
Let me read over it, and I will get back to you. Where is that from?
It was posted on a listener-made forum, originally part of a longer thread that was talking about my honesty in reporting on the story.
Okay, this is the stuff that I don't like. People running on the assumptions that they know nothing about. Let me read over it tonight, and I'll get back to you tomorrow.
March 18th,
2019. Be honest, I'm really not happy with the forum and the way y'all are handling it. My name should never be spoken by anyone unless you know the truth.
I'm not in charge of the forum directly, only the podcast, but I certainly understand why this would be concerning. I just want to get the truth out there and dispel all the rumors.
Y'all are just going off rumors. I don't think none of this helps Matt out.
Trust me, I don't want to deal in rumors or gossip either, but all the experts I've talked to have suggested that keeping Matt's case alive in the press is pivotal.
That's what you believe. None of y'all went through what we went through. And it's ridiculous to read the things that people are saying.
April 13th, 2019.
If I agree to share my side of the story, I want it to be face-to-face and not edited.
Definitely. I'm in Florida currently, but I could arrange to come to North Carolina or wherever is convenient for you. And absolutely, I'll promise not to edit the audio if that's what you'd prefer. If you'd be willing to just let me know, I'll make plans to come up. Also, if you're more comfortable, we can talk off the record beforehand. No recordings.
Let me see when it will be a good time.
May 22nd, 2019. Hey, X. Hope y'all are doing well. I wanted to circle back and see if we could set a time to meet like we were talking about. I'm going to be up in North Carolina next month and would love to set a time to sit down and chat.
June 3rd, 2019.
I'm going to be in town soon. Would love to set a time to meet if you're still willing.
Depending when you are talking.
I'll be in town June 9th, 10th, 15th, and 16th.
I'll look at my schedule.
Awesome. Let me know when you can. Would love to get together.
June 9th, 2019.
Do you have any availability to meet tomorrow? Would love to meet with you while I'm in town if you're available.
June 10th, 2019.
Would love to get together while I'm in town.
June 15th.
I'm in Elmsdale working this weekend.
You're around at all on Monday?
No, I'll still be in Elmsdale.
This proved to be a pattern throughout our conversation. We would set plans to talk over the phone or to meet up for an interview. But when the time came, X would stop responding. Although I began to realize that if I just kept asking questions, he'd usually respond immediately. Do you know anything about JJC?
Yeah, I know him.
Do you know if he knew Matt?
Can I ask why? After Matt married Angel, he only hung out with family and a few selected friends.
I've heard rumors about JJC. He died only 3 days after Matt's murder. I've also heard rumors about SGL.
SGL was a punk. He could never pull off something like that.
Oh, really? You knew him? I've heard he's not the nicest dude in the world.
You're talking to the wrong people.
Who do I need to talk to?
SGL was a druggie, not a killer.
He couldn't have been both?
No, I'm telling you. SGL would have had a hard time getting those pistols, and he was too much of a pussy.
Gotcha. I certainly didn't know him. I hadn't heard anything solid on him, only that he was questioned at one point.
He probably was, but he was a convicted felon, so it would have been hard for him to get a hold of those pistols. And he's not like that. The person that did this did not care for life itself.
I actually have some more information on what SGL may have had access to at the time of the murder, but I'm also skeptical he's the killer.
I'm telling you, you can research that side. I grew up with SGL. He was very awkward, especially in a fight. Above all else, Matt knows SGL good, and he would have said his name. She would have heard it. The weekend before Matt was murdered, he was playing soccer with me and the kids. He asked me to help him learn how to shoot a pistol. If he was having problems with someone like SGL, he would have said something.
X's recollection about Matt asking about getting a gun is significant for obvious reasons. It would have taken place just a day or so before Matt was gunned down in his own home. It was also interesting that X wasn't the only one to remember Matt making similar comments before his death. Here again is Matt's first cousin, Dana.
My mom passed away in October of 08, and she was at Gordon Hospice House in Statesville. Matt and Angel and the kids came, and he asked to speak to my mom exclusively. And this is when she was still lucid. And that's what I'm talking about. There was just a connection there. And then he asked us if we had any experience with having guns in the house, if that's something that you would advise. We thought that's kind of an odd time to be asking. Of course, we were all, you know, a lot of the family were always there when Mom was going through everything. But we thought, well, that's kind of weird.
He was asking you about guns?
Yeah, and that was in October of 08. So that was, you know, 8 months before.
8 months before he was murdered, he was asking you about guns.
Right. You know, I don't remember exactly who all was standing there in like a little conversation that we were having.
He brought it up.
Right. And there wasn't a reason given, just how did we feel about it? How did you feel about it? Would you feel safe with the children? You know, that kind of thing.
Do you remember what his demeanor was?
He was sad and upset because Mom was getting ready to die. It's hard to pinpoint anything else because, like I said, he was very close to Mom. Pretty sure that's the last time he saw her alive. Stuck out to me that, even then, I was like, this is such a weird time to be asking that.
X went on to say that despite this unusual topic of conversation, Matt was otherwise behaving normally on June 7th, and that he didn't indicate he was in danger or wanted the gun for any reason other than general home protection. Why did he want to learn to shoot a pistol? I have three other people telling me Matt was talking about getting a gun in the weeks up until his murder.
That's true. He was asking me to help him find the right one.
Do you know why? Why he wanted a gun?
Normal stuff. Protection.
Do you know if he had beef with anyone in particular?
No, Matt never had beef with anybody. I'm telling you, no offense, but that forum and the interviews are full of people who have no idea who Matt was, besides Byron and his sister. Matt was a hero that day. He did what he was made to do. That is what should be celebrated.
I want his life celebrated, but I want his murder solved and his killer unable to hurt anyone ever again.
That's fine, but trying to dig up dirt doesn't do anything.
I want to talk to people who knew Matt better, but no one will talk to me. I'm not trying to dig up dirt. I'm trying to figure out what was going on.
If you want to know why people won't talk to you, it's because of what it looks like and what people are saying in the comments.
I can't help what people are saying in the comments, but I've tried really, really hard to be unbiased and to get to the truth.
I'm just telling you, it's not helping you.
I get that. And I appreciate your honesty, I truly do. But if I can refute these rumors, I can silence those voices once and for all. And then we can all focus on getting to the real killer.
Matt was a hero who lost his life saving his kids. They were scared that the killer was still out there, so they moved Angel out to our farm so she would be protected. There was only one way in and one way out, and I monitored the place well.
Why were you questioned? Why did police go down that rabbit trail?
I can't text all that. We'll have to talk about that.
In 2013, X was interrogated by investigators from the Mooresville Police Department and the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation. During this time, X claims to have been accused by investigators of committing the murder. And I find the reasons behind these alleged accusations confusing. X claims their suspicion of him stemmed in part from the revelation about the June 7th conversation with Matt about learning to shoot and helping him pick out a gun, and the fact that X had dated Angel for a brief time in their young adulthood when they were both camp counselors at a camp in Lake Laura, North Carolina, during the summer of 1997.
June 28th, 2019.
Can I trust Tommy?
He's been around Mooresville for a while. I don't know how he knows Matt, though.
He was an investigator at the time, right? Did he really work Matt's case?
He might have. He isn't the one who interrogated me, though.
He wasn't? Was it Adrian?
No. SBI.
DJ?
Yes. And I think Adrian.
Was this in 2011 when you were interrogated?
I think it was approximately 6 years ago. I would have to ask an ex-girlfriend of mine to make sure.
What do you say about DJ? Can I trust what he says?
My opinion of these guys are not good, so asking me, that is not going to help you. I don't trust anyone in the Mooresville Police Department.
My opinion of any of them involved in this investigation isn't good. I'm trying to figure out if it's negligence, incompetence, or corruption.
Incompetence. They weren't ready for this.
X made clear throughout our conversation his distrust for the Mooresville Police Department.
Understand, it's just never been good between me and the police department in Mooresville.
Was it Adrian who accused you without even vetting your alibi? What's the history with you and the Mooresville Police Department? Could that play into how all this went down?
Yes, but through texting, you're not going to understand.
I need to understand. Do you have any time to talk today?
Friday is packed for me.
Any time this weekend?
Maybe Sunday.
I'm free Sunday. What time works?
Not sure yet. Text me tomorrow.
Will do. June 29th, 2019. Hey, X, what time tomorrow works best?
After 4.
All right, I'll call you then. What's a good number to use?
June 30th, 2019, 1:51 p.m.
You around tonight around 7 p.m.?
7:45 p.m.
Hey, man, I'm around all of tonight. Let me know when is a good time and I'll give you a call.
July 1st, 2019.
I'm sorry, man. Came home after working on my girlfriend's pool and fell asleep.
No worries. Any time to talk today?
Maybe tomorrow. Let me look at my schedule. Mondays are kind of crazy for me.
July 8th, 2019.
You and Angel started dating at Camp Lurecrest?
It was only at Lurecrest, and it was only the summer, not long.
And never again?
Nope. I got married shortly after that and was married for 17 years.
Right. That was what I heard. And that was all the cops had? That you dated Angel in the 90s for a few weeks?
Yep, that and my arguments with them, and the fact that Matt asked me to work with him on shooting and purchasing a gun.
They honestly thought something from the 1990s led to what happened to Matt in 2009? Something is wrong with that. You said Matt told you he was interested in getting a gun. Could it be that he ended up getting a gun before his murder, and that one of the two guns used to kill him was his?
No, because the police would have known he had one.
Gotcha. I've wondered, though, maybe he got one from a friend and it just wasn't registered. It's just bizarre there was two guns and apparently only one shooter.
Sunday, he asked me to help him pick one out. Monday morning, he was murdered.
And that doesn't seem like a coincidence? I suppose it could be.
A lot of people at our church come to me for advice on guns. So until that happened that morning, I would say yes.
So you'd be the guy to talk to. I don't think it's unusual that a guy would be wondering whether or not to arm himself to protect his family, but the timing just seems too close. It seems like there was a reason he wanted one.
I never asked why. I just told him I would help him out with the purchase and training.
But you were in Virginia at the time of the murder, though, right?
Yes.
That's so crazy that they didn't do their homework before accusing someone. Crazy's not the right word. Malpractice. Where in Virginia?
Grovedale.
You were working at a shops a lot?
Yes.
And the police department hadn't interviewed any of your coworkers or anything?
They called my boss, which really pissed me off.
I can imagine. And your boss told them that you were at work?
Yep.
Gotcha. What company were you working with?
Plymouth Construction.
If they accused you in 2013 without doing this simple info gathering, that needs to be called out. Matt's case needs to be transferred to another department. What do you think happened to Matt? Who would want to do that to him?
The devil. I know that's crazy, but it's what I really think.
You mean the actual devil?
Yes.
Why do you think that?
There are some things in life that are bigger than what you see.
I don't doubt that, but a lot of real people do devilish things. The kind of person who do that to Matt, they've probably done other terrible things and will probably do more until they're caught.
I don't think they will do it again. If he is alive, he barely got away last time.
August 12th, 2019.
Hey, X, I hope all is well. I wanted to see if you'd still be willing to talk to me at some point in the next few weeks. Eventually, I will have to move forward in reporting what I've learned and have been told by credible sources. As I've said before, I think your story is very significant. and I'd feel dishonest if I were to leave it unmentioned on the podcast, but I'd much rather have your help on it than having to go it alone.
August 29th, 2019.
Were you at the barbecue the night before Matt was murdered?
The night before Matt was murdered, he was playing soccer at the farm.
Really? That would have been Monday night, right? He was killed early Tuesday morning. I heard that there was a barbecue Matt went to hours before his murder, and some people have suggested the event took place at Matt and Angel's place. But it sounds like whatever people were talking about actually happened at the farm?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I've never heard anything about a barbecue.
Interesting. So he was there playing soccer the Monday night before he was murdered. I know it was a long time ago, but did he seem to have something on his mind?
I told you, the only thing that seemed different was he asked me to help him learn how to shoot a gun.
His supervisor said he got off at 7:30 p.m., so this would have been around 8 p.m.?
Are you talking about Sunday?
He was killed on a Monday going into Tuesday morning.
Right, but he was at my house Sunday.
Gotcha. So you didn't see him on Monday night?
No.
Okay, that makes more sense then. And you don't remember hearing anything about an event Monday night? I'm told it took the SRT 100 minutes to get in the house because they thought the person had been in the house hiding since before Matt and Angel went to bed, like they had been to the barbecue and hid in the house.
Problem is, the Mooresville Police Department wasn't ready for it, and they did a lot of stuff that cost investigation.
Stuff like what?
Like not responding and going in right away? Because when shots are fired, it's no longer a hostage situation.
Well, that's the damn truth. Do you think it was more than one person who did it?
Only one person was in the room, but I don't know if somebody else was helping him out. I do know this. If he would have known the person, I promise you Matt would have said his name, and Angel would have heard it.
So you think it was someone he didn't know? What if Angel didn't hear it over the gunfire? 38 caliber rounds would have been deafening in that room, right?
Yeah, but he would have been hollering his name. And Angel knows enough people that Matt knew, she would have recognized him better.
Yeah, I definitely thought about that, but it seems like they've hinted that they do know who did it. After I started the podcast, Brenda called and told me I was putting everyone in danger and said he is alive and well.
No, I'm not saying he's dead. I'm just saying I don't think he knew him. And to be honest, I don't believe the cops even know who did it. They're just saying it.
See, that's what I've been worrying about.
Yeah, it's been too long for you not to put pressure on that person.
Exactly.
I'm just saying they don't have a clue, and they weren't ready for it.
If they weren't ready then, and they don't have a clue by now, it's time they handed it to someone else.
Brenda just doesn't want for people to put bad things out about Matt and for his children to see it. She's being a mama, and I can understand that.
Yeah, I respect it on a certain level, but it's been odd the way it's all gone down. I mean, the experts I've talked to have said they've never heard of a similar situation where the family of a victim doesn't want press.
I don't think it's the press. They don't like seeing people accuse them of doing stuff that's crazy. 95% of the people talking on the forum don't know anything about what happened or what they have been through.
I get that. No one knows what happened except for those who were involved. But I think some of the suspicion comes from questions that have never been answered. Parts of the story that don't make any sense.
X called investigators' accusations in 2013 way off base. Not only did he love Matt as a close friend who he had known since childhood, X also insists he was provably out of the state at the time of Matt's murder, a 3-hour drive away in Virginia, working the night shift at a store that was being remodeled. X claims he was cleared as a suspect after police spoke with his supervisor and subjected him to a polygraph. A few weeks ago, I contacted a source within the company X worked for in 2009. This person confirmed that investigators had visited the company's offices in North Carolina on multiple occasions and that they were thorough in their inquiries. The source also claimed that investigators actually traveled to Virginia to further investigate. But importantly, this source claimed that he himself remembers reviewing X's time card, which showed that X was in Virginia, working the night shift on the evening before Matt's murder. Ultimately, though, this person was unaware as to whether or not X had ever been cleared as a suspect.
Everyone that they accused on that forum has subjected themselves to lie detector tests and have been cleared.
Really? Brenda and Angel were cleared?
Yes.
From the polygraph?
Yes, and also questioning.
Did they make you take one?
Yes.
And I take it you passed?
Yes, but the person they were using for the lie detector test had only been doing it for a year. So that's what I'm saying. They weren't ready for it.
The reliability of polygraphs are certainly the subject of much debate. In North Carolina and most other states, their results are inadmissible in court.
Please do not use my name in the information that you're getting, because I promised the family I wouldn't talk. I will help you, but please don't use my name.
I don't have to use your name, but I do need the information, and I appreciate your help.
October 1st, 2019.
Do not use me in the podcast. I thought I made that clear.
I will not use your name, but I have to use the information.
Dude, the name you made up is easy to figure out. And if you haven't figured it out, there was a reason Lucy was not told where we were keeping Angel. Loose lips sink ships. The reason we keep it quiet was because they felt he was still out there.
If it was a random home invasion, why would the person go to the trouble? And if it wasn't random, why were they being targeted?
Whether it was random or not, she had a description of them. Some people come back to finish the job.
But it was reported the next day by police that she didn't get a good look at the killer.
But he doesn't know that.
But at the time, you're saying they had absolutely no idea who could be targeting them and why?
We still have no clue, and when dealing with that, you keep quiet and tighten down on access. There was only one way in and one way out of that farm. We knew when people were coming and going. We had meetings all the time, and everybody was on high alert, always.
But you wouldn't have known quite what to expect, right?
If you came down that drive and I didn't know you, you were stopped by me or one of my boys, and all of us were strapped.
It's hard for me to believe that the family didn't have any idea who did this. Maybe they didn't back then, but it definitely seems like they do now. Is it possible that they didn't tell you everything that was going on?
They have someone they're monitoring, but the problem is they don't have enough evidence from what they say to convict. And I told him, after what I went through, do not tell me who he is.
Someone the family monitors or the police?
Police.
Did they become aware of him after they questioned you in 2013?
Not sure when.
Do you know what they think the motive was?
Nope. The problem is, no matter what, until there's significant evidence, everybody remains a suspect. Or that's the way it should be.
So why does the family trust them to get this done? That doesn't make any sense.
They don't.
But they told me they do. Brenda said they have full confidence, as does Mandy and Hannah.
So, that's why they had me protecting her at the funeral and at the 1-year anniversary, instead of the police?
Well, then they were lying to me.
No, I'm not saying she's lying. It's just really hard to see the stuff that people are saying on the forum that aren't credible.
Yeah, but I'm talking about what they've told me. They said they have full confidence in the police, and that's why they aren't going to any other sources to get justice for Matt. I'm just trying to understand. If we're confident in the police and the police are being diligent about getting justice for Matt, then that's fine. I'd be comfortable walking away. But if we don't trust that, then I'm not okay with that. And I don't think you would be either.
I'm not okay with any of it, but I will tell you, I don't trust Mooresville Police Department and never will.
You're in good company, because I don't either. And I'm not okay with them spinning their wheels for decades.
October 3rd, 2019.
I'm going to tell you for the last time, because I told you several times, do not use me on your podcast. I take that back. I want a sit-down interview, and I want to have total control of what you put in it.
Of course. I'd be more than willing to do that. When would you be available?
I'm available most weekends. Are you in Florida, though?
I am, but I'd be willing to come up.
Let me think about it, because also, I am going down to Florida around Christmas.
I'm actually planning on being in Elmsdale the first weekend in November for a family thing. You're around that area, right?
This final offer to meet for a sit-down interview never came to fruition. I let X know I'd be up in North Carolina, near where he lives, the first week in November to see family. But when the day came, he said he was out of town. I later sent a series of written questions to X, asking if he could answer them for the podcast. I've yet to receive his response. During the course of this story, I fished for rumors, chasing some of them to peculiar places. It's easy to get so wrapped up in what we don't know that we forget what little we do. But the fact is, we do know someone who witnessed Matt's murder, his wife, Angel. Last summer, I did a second interview with Matt and Angel's oldest daughter, Hannah. During the conversation, Hannah relayed to me her mom's wishes not to be a part of the podcast, and so I agreed not to reach out to her. That sentiment was only reinforced when her maternal grandmother accused me of harassing the family and told me firmly not to contact any of them again. And I've respected those wishes, but I felt it was important to contact Angel directly and give her one more chance to provide her perspective before ending this series. And so I did, but I've received no response. But when I met up with her last summer, Hannah did tell me a little bit more about what her mom has told her about the moments after the attack, and I feel it's important for you to hear.
Basically, like, my dad pushed the man into the bathroom so that my mom could escape with my brother, who was sleeping in the bed with him, and she wasn't able to get to my sister, and so she just had to run out of the house, really, and try to get help as quickly as possible. But there definitely was that risk as far as timing, like, if her grabbing and none of them getting out. So that was, like, I'm sure an extremely hard moment for her,
yeah.
You know, like, just having to trust the Lord that he would take care of her. My mom talks about how when she was, like, running out the door down the driveway, like, hearing that final shot and scream and just knowing, like, having that sinking feeling and knowing that that was the last one.
How would Angel have known what she heard was the last gunshot? There's still so many questions. But as you'll remember from the first episode, Angel has spoken publicly about her experiences on the morning of June 9th. In that first episode, we played clips from a video posted to YouTube in October of 2017 called Jesus, I Believe, Angel's Story. In that video, Matt's widow reflects on her spiritual journey after having survived this traumatic event. Angel, in her own words, describes her experiences during the attack. I feel this is important for us to revisit. The following are clips from that video.
I remember just looking at her and just saying, Hannah, last night this evil thing happened to our family, and your dad did not survive. I remember just hearing a sound, and I just turned my head towards our door and saw the shadow of a man just standing in our doorway. I immediately knew that this was real, like this was not a dream. And he opened fire on us. And Matt got up to fight with the man, and I knew that I had been hit. And I just grabbed Josiah out of the bed and we ran out of the house. And I remember being on the phone with 911, knowing that I was bleeding. SWAT team got there within minutes and were taking me to the hospital and being stitched up and having a doctor come into my room to tell me that Matt did not survive. You know, what came out of me was a sound that I had never heard, but it was a nightmare. And I knew that I was living this nightmare.
As brief and vague as this segment is, it's truly the most comprehensive firsthand account of the attack that we have available to us. But I wanted to get the perspective of a professional trained in analyzing what people say after having experienced crimes like this. So I reached out to someone who's become like an old friend. Dr. Carol Lieberman is a nationally renowned forensic psychiatrist who was featured in an episode last season. Since early last year, Dr. Lieberman has remained in touch, emailing back and forth about what I've learned studying Matt's case. Like me, Dr. Lieberman has spent time reaching out to different networks in hopes of increasing exposure for Matt's case. Given her experience, I wanted to hear Dr. Lieberman's thoughts on what Angel's comments were in the video. So from a different end of the country, I listened through the phone as Dr. Lieberman watched the video for the first time.
Huh. What do you think of that?
Oh, man. Well, what strikes me the most about this film is that it's so shallow. She's supposed to be giving this message of hope, but, you know, it's so interesting. Like, she doesn't say Matt was murdered. she said she told her daughter, last night, this evil thing happened to our family, and your dad did not survive. An evil thing happened, like something came out of the sky, and your father did not survive. Not somebody murdered your father. He didn't survive it, like the plague or like a tornado or something. That is really a key statement in this video, because she doesn't want to admit, or she doesn't want the world to think of what happened as a murder, because she wants to separate herself from that.
I agree with Dr. Lieberman's observation here. Certain comments are curiously phrased, but then again, I'm not sure if this points to any deeper meaning. What has stood out to me the most about this video isn't what's said, but rather what's gone unmentioned.
The biggest thing that struck me about the whole thing, it's never even implied that the murder is unsolved. She knows that this is a fairly popular Christian rock band. She knows that thousands of people are going to see it, and they have. Never says, and his murder is still unsolved, and gives a plea to, if anyone has any information, the thousands of people that have seen that video, and you can look in the comments, and they have no questions about the unsolved murder. They have no idea. If I saw it, I probably would assume it had been solved.
She said, like, the ambulance came and took me to the hospital, and here she had this little injury, and it's all about how she called 911 and the ambulance came and took her to the hospital. It was such a brutal murder. It was so hard. I mean, everything is me.
In all fairness, the apparent subject matter of this video is not the murder of Matt Stewart, but rather overcoming difficult circumstances through faith, using Angel's story as an example. But the murder being unsolved seems like a gigantic part to leave out, even in a summary. But it's not the only major piece of the story that goes unmentioned in the video. At no point does Angel mention that her other child was in the house with the killer, and that not only did that child survive, but she managed to sleep through a barrage of gunfire down the hall. I understand the video is meant to be a brief summation of experiences, but all of this seems like a gaping hole.
The biggest thing that stuck out, and it took me a while to make this realization, I should have come to it a lot sooner. The record shows that Matt being found dead and her 3-year-old daughter having been found alive happened simultaneously. The daughter was taken out and was given the 10-4 at 2:31. Matt was found dead at the scene at 2:30. I'm trying to imagine a scenario in which Angel would have gotten the news that Matt had been murdered, and not also simultaneously gotten the news that her 3-year-old daughter, having spent 100 minutes in a house with a vicious killer, is miraculously not just unharmed, but slept through the whole thing. It was miraculous, and that's the way that the family describes it, but not in this video. That whole scenario doesn't exist.
Yes, absolutely.
My big question is why?
Angel hasn't been alone in her decision not to mention this component of the story, despite it having been readily available in official documents and arguably one of the more riveting facts of the case. The press has largely ignored the 3-year-old's presence in the house and the 100-minute period in which she was left alone inside with the killer's whereabouts still unknown. A notable exception was an article posted on the website of a Charlotte-based TV station called WBTV on June 11, 2009, by a reporter named Michael Handy. The article includes quotes from an interview that Handy did with the neighbor who opened the door for Angel to call 911, Mike Lawson. The article reads in part, quote, "Lawson said Angela was carrying her 2-year-old son, and they were both covered in blood. Lawson added that Angela never mentioned her 6-year-old was still sleeping inside," end quote. The ages of the children are clearly off. Whether or not that's the fault of the reporter or information provided by Mike Lawson, I suppose we'll never know. 7 years later, in a 2016 interview with Jonathan Weaver, Lawson again repeated what he had said to WBTV, that he doesn't recall Angel ever mentioning the 3-year-old still being in the house. Between Mr. Lawson's testimonies and Angel's YouTube video, this omission of a key part of the story seems to be a bizarre pattern, of the more haunting elements of the silence surrounding this case. But as you've heard in these episodes, there are plenty of those who are willing to break that silence if given the opportunity. Underneath thick layers of secrecy and rumors, there's a story that deserves to be told. A caring family man who deserves much more than silence. Perhaps this podcast has only scratched the surface, but as I draw the series to a close, I pledge to continue seeking out networks and investigative journalists to enter the fray, to use their platforms to provide this situation with the attention it's always deserved, and use their resources and expertise to dig further than I ever could. I hope that you join me in that pursuit, using your own voice to reach out to news outlets, TV shows, and podcasts, both local and national, urging them to cover Matt's case. No matter how many years pass without answers or even updates from investigators, the truth of what happened that dark summer morning on Shepherd Hill Drive is still out there, as distant as it may seem, and I still believe it's a truth worth chasing. For Matt and those who love him, we'll keep asking questions, and we'll keep this story unforgotten. Unforgotten is a Bold Era production, written and recorded by myself, Freddie Wilson, in the always sunny Daytona Beach, Florida. There are so many people I want to thank individually for their help with this series. I could probably fill a whole episode naming people. If you've contacted me with information, tips, or encouragement during these last few years, I want you to know that I deeply, deeply appreciate your support. And for those who have invested financially in this project, thank you for helping to make it happen. I'm truly grateful. But there are some folks I do want to thank specifically. First and foremost, my family, my parents and brothers who have supported this financially, conducted on-the-ground research, and have been a constant source of advice and support. And my wife for pushing me to keep going when the going got tough. Jonathan Weaver for always lending his insight and expertise on journalism. I also want to recognize Steve. You may know Steve from the forum and question and answer episodes, but the truth is, he's been helping me every step of the way, workshopping ideas, combing through research, and editing episodes. I truly couldn't have done this without him. I'd also like to thank Cornell Harris, Matt Garrett, Dr. Carol Lieberman, Danielle Allen, Michelle Watts, Matt's cousin Dana, Brandy Compton, Lucy, Alex, the pastors at River Life Fellowship, and all the wonderful people on Shepherd Hill Drive for their willingness to help me and their constant support. As always, this series is dedicated to the life and legacy of Matt Stewart. His memory will stay unforgotten.